Reset the podcast is brought to you in association with Liars, the non-alcoholic spirits brand. Whether it's low alcohol or no alcohol, Liars helps you enjoy your classic favourite cocktails.
Hello everyone, my name is Suki Thompson. Welcome to Reset the podcast. A place for you to get some inspiration and advice to help you live a more fulfilling work life. I do hope that your journey to feel more connected, more inspired, just a bit more energized starts here. Take a moment now with me to reset. It's hard to imagine a woman starting her life under a communist regime becoming the leader of a major technology company. But that's precisely the journey that my latest guest has made. Today, I chat to Milka Kramer, country manager for Pinterest UK and Ireland. We talk about her upbringing in the then communist Bulgaria and how many of those experiences shaped her outlook on life. How Bulgaria's eventual journey to democracy also fine-tuned Milka's natural drive, her courage, and desire to take risks. In our conversation, it's clear how important her own values and purpose are, and how relationships play a major part in her life. From creating structured time for unstructured conversations at work, to helping build deeper connections to the important relationship that Pinterest has with its customers, which is where we discuss why Pinterest has banned all weight loss ads and why pinners can now search for curly hair. This really is an episode for anyone who shares my and Milka's belief in the power of people to drive business performance. Milka, hi, it's so lovely to see you today.
Hi, Suki, thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here with you today.
Oh, well, it's lovely. And you're back from holiday, so I must say you look very relaxed and chilled. You've been in Bulgaria, I think, for 3 weeks, haven't you?
Yeah, so because of COVID, I haven't been able to see my family for 2 years, so I haven't been able to go back for such a long time, and I'm just back, and it was a fantastic trip. I'm very emotional seeing everybody, my extended family, my friends, spending quality time with the kids, good weather. It was such a good holiday. By the end of it, I forgot my password, so it took me some time to log into my work computer, which I think is a sign of a good holiday. It's been great to reconnect, to really be with my family face-to-face in real life versus just doing it virtually.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's such a sign, isn't it? Not being able to see your family for so long, it's so tough. And there's lots of people like that, all over the country, all over the world, who just haven't been able to see their families. And we'll touch on a little bit about, you know, your background, where you've come from, and your journey in Pinterest. And I've got to say, I was thinking about, you know, why am I so excited to talk to you today? Well, you know, one of the reasons is I always love talking to amazing female leaders in particular. But I think for me, certainly my time during lockdown, there's a few things, you know, you look back on and think, actually, that was a real highlight of a very difficult time. And I think for me, discovering Pinterest was one of them, because we met before lockdown. But actually, I hadn't really had the time to explore it, to use it, to become a big kind of fan. And I am now definitely a pinner. And I think for me, I have used it, as you know, for designing my house, followed Jazz, who designed her room and kind of everything in her life, I think, via Pinterest, our fabulous garden cinema that has taken months to create, but we have loved doing that. But I think the other thing, which I had never thought about until it was part of the Pinterest events that we were involved in, was creating a brand on Pinterest for Let's Reset. And as we've worked with people during lockdown, where we haven't met people, we haven't met, you know, new employees, new clients, one of the things we do is we send them a link to up in that's all about the kind of feel of Let's Reset. So let's start with a bit about Pinterest, because, you know, for you, you were at Microsoft for years. What made you want to go and be the lead of Pinterest in the UK and Ireland?
Well, a couple of things. So first, now I've been so lucky to have been, I spent 11 years with Microsoft, and I really consider myself so lucky to have been part of this company for so long, because I learned so much as a professional, as an individual. But when this opportunity came up, it was just alignment of a couple of things. One was an opportunity to scale a business that actually delivers so much value for both our users as well as advertisers. And then secondly, was just the company, the product, the people that I met throughout the very rigorous process, they really aligned to my own personal values. So the company values and my values aligned so closely that I just felt it's such a great opportunity. I have been a Pinterest user, but also actually during lockdown, my use of Pinterest has intensified even further. So I'm using it now for quite a lot of different things. But it's as a platform, it's such a positive place. It's such an inspiring place. You know, our users call it, 90% of them call it the online oasis. So people go there to be with themselves, to feel good about themselves. You know, and that's why we call it actually personal media. We don't call it social media, because it's not really about talking about the news of the day or debating politics. You go there to imagine and envision your life and then make it a reality.
Yeah, gosh, there's so many things just in that opening little few sentences. So let's try and unpack a few of those. Let's talk first around. You said, you know, we know that purpose is really important. And you said that, you know, you love the fact that your own personal values and the values of Pinterest kind of coincide. What are those personal values and how did you link those to what you're trying to do at Pinterest?
Well, there's a couple of things. So I'll talk about the company's values, and I'll link it to my own. But it was one of the things is, you know, we always put pinners first. So everything that's being built on the platform is with the user in mind. And that is such a strong value proposition in terms of how does the platform build a product. So one of the things we talk about is that positivity, how do we build an inspired and positive internet? And as a mother, as a woman and as a, you know, human being, that's so important to me personally. And one of the things we say is that in order to build positivity, that doesn't just happen. You actually have to engineer it that way. So in everything that we do, positivity is really front and center of how we build a product. You know, some of the things we're the first major platform to ban completely any weight loss ad. And that's an evolution of policies that we've had for so long. You know, if you go onto the platform until now and you search for, let's say, beauty advice, we are showing you a different skin color, so you can choose the skin color that's for you. Just now, something I'm personally very passionate about, we are actually launching a new feature, which is about launching new hair patterns. So I have curly hair, so when I look for hairstyles, actually find curly hair is that's my personal one, by the way. We have six, we're going to have six on the platform, but people will be able to see themselves on the platform, and that ability to see your authentic self on the internet and really build that inspired, positive vision for yourself is such a strong value proposition. So that was one of the things, like that positivity and that putting the consumer in the center of everything we do was something that spoke really strongly to me. And then there are other values around how we engage with each other. You know, all the people I met throughout the process were just so amazing that I just felt I want to work there.
Yeah, I can see that. But that's so interesting. So I'll be able to see, and, you know, for those who don't know and you can't see me, I've got kind of longish, mid-length, blondish, straight hair. You've got amazing, I love your hair. It's so curly and fabulous, but you're right. It's quite unusual hair. So I hadn't really thought about that so much. You probably don't see yourself often when you go onto a platform or even when you're trying to find products for yourself, do you?
No, and actually for people that like me that have very curly hair, there's like a community where, like, every time you meet somebody else with similar hair to yours, you start exchanging tips hairstyles, hair products, etc. So actually this is I'm something that I'm so passionate about, because, you know, now you can go in and look for summer hairstyles and I can pick and really see the filter come in for, like, really people like me with hair like me, and I can imagine what what kind of new things I can maybe try.
Yeah. And I think your point then about, you know, having a very kind of positive and positivity being at the heart of Pinterest. It's interesting, you know, we've seen, haven't we, a real, not just a backlash against social media, but a real understanding of the challenges that social media bring. You know, we've seen all the good stuff that happens, but, you know, we have seen very overt discrimination, racism, and social media has been at the core of some of that in a really upsetting and distressing way, I think. So, you know, and I think it's, as somebody you look in from the outside, it's difficult to believe that the platforms can't do something to stop this. So I'm interested, you know, you touched on it, but what are you actively doing to enable that sense of an oasis of positivity to be in Pinterest so that people can't come along and, you know, put in horrible things or visuals that you don't feel are right for the Pinterest people?
I mean, again, I have to bring back to actually the purpose of the way people use Pinterest is very different. Again, it's a personal media. It's not social media. We don't have that interaction about the news of the day. People really go there to be inspired and to plan their lives. And by that, we just see very different behavior. Now, with that, obviously, we have things in place in terms of editorial policies and how you check for the content, et cetera, et cetera. But I just think by the way our users and the reason why our users come on the platform is very different. So it's really they come there to be with themselves.
Yes, yes, which I love. And that's, you know, part of the reason I love it. Let's talk a little bit about you as a leader. You know, you've been at Microsoft, you're now at Pinterest. That is typically quite a male-dominated world. You know, you've been in technology companies for a lot of your career. How has that been? Have you felt like the sort of crusading woman who's been there to get people to think differently? Or has that not really come into your you know, environment? Have you been just much more around just creating your own sense as a leader?
I think for me, actually, was a couple of things when I started, because when I started my career, the first 7-8 years, I actually worked in Bulgaria, where I'm from. Yes. And then I went and did an MBA, then I joined Microsoft. But actually, it was first being Eastern European, which with English as a second language, and then being a woman. And so coming into an American company, when I joined Microsoft, for the first 2 years, I lived in Prague in the Czech Republic. So even English there was a whole other complication of languages. That there was a lot wrapped in it. And look, it hasn't been easy. And I think now with years, I've become more comfortable and confident in myself as a female leader. But I think at the beginning, when I first started working, you know, I definitely felt a very strong imposter syndrome. I was really questioning the value that I bring, and, you know, and especially in meetings, interactions, I found myself very often wondering, like, how come I'm there representing Microsoft? And, you know, one of the things I used to do is I used to have like this one very formal dress that I would wear to all the important meetings. So my hair, as curly as it is, I'll wear it always pulled back in a bun, and I ordered myself glasses. So I wore like glasses. I don't wear glasses, but I had like these big glasses because I thought this is what's going to make me look more professional and, you know, more, and people will take me more seriously. But the reality is a lot of this was my own insecurity, and with time, and obviously now I wear very colorful clothes and my hair is down and all the rest of it. But it definitely hasn't been easy, but it had a couple of layers of you know, again, being European, Eastern European, being a woman in an environment where I wasn't speaking the language.
Yeah, and I can understand that. Tell me a little bit about what it means to be Bulgarian. What's the kind of, you know, what kind of characteristics do you have that are typically Bulgarian, you know, just in the workplace? I could describe perhaps some of the things that make me very English. I have a view on you, but I'm interested what you think about yourself.
I think there's a couple of things, actually. And probably the one thing that I have had to work on a lot is a directness. We have quite a direct way of communication. And so actually when I, particularly when I came to the UK, At the beginning, I was understanding the nuances of the language. It took me some time. So even now I say that the two words I don't like in the English language are fine and interesting. When somebody says they're fine or that something is interesting, always I have to go, which one of the interesting it is. But then the other thing for me is, you know, I come from, so I was born during communism. So I remember the communist time. And that way of upbringing is something that, you know, has stayed with me just in the way of like what life was like. You know, my first corporate job, was I was a receptionist at the company where I worked. And these are things that have shaped who I am today in many ways. One of the things, you know, I live and lead by is never forget where we come from, and that hierarchical thinking doesn't work. And I think these are things, these are definitely things that has taken me a while to accept how they've shaped me, but they definitely shaped me.
Gosh, that's so interesting. So just describe for a moment your upbringing in a communist country. Where did you live? What was it like growing up?
So we lived in a one-bedroom flat, four people. So me, wow. my sister, my parents. And by the way, that was the upgrade from the house where I was born, where we didn't even have a bathroom inside. And you know, and I remember the times where after school I have to go and queue. We have rations for food, and so that was when I finish school, I'll go and do that. And then, you know, we didn't have electricity all the time. We didn't have water all the time. But with that, I also had a very happy childhood. So when I say that, you know, it's been because it was so communal. We were all living together. It was this block of flats where it was all young families. And, you know, compared to the standards and the way my kids are growing up right now, it's like I had very, very little, but I had so much. And I think with that, and I think with when you've been through that, and then the country went through democracy, etc., there was this drive and courage and risk-taking that I have, and I think I have so strongly in me. And also really understanding what's important in life.
Yeah, gosh, that's amazing. So how did you go from living in that one-bedroom flat with your parents and your sister to even, you know, going to college to then get a job at Microsoft? How did that all happen?
Well, I followed, you know, I went to high school, university in Bulgaria, first job in Bulgaria. But then what happened is, you know, it's one of those pivotal moments of my life where I said, I want to go and see the world and see, can I work somewhere else? So I decided to do an MBA. And INSEAD was one.
And you went to INSEAD, didn't you?
Yeah, but it was one of those moments where I said, can I do this? And then I did a test, and I got a high score, and I got a scholarship, and then I mortgaged my flat. I mean, I remember people telling me, you're completely crazy, because I had a good job in Bulgaria, and they're going, you're going to go and do that, and you're going to go into all this debt, and then how are you going to pay this back? And I said, I'll regret not doing this. Like, as soon as I got accepted, I remember thinking, I will regret not doing this. And it was the best decision I did, you know, because INSEAD was such a great experience. You know, I met people from 50 different nationalities with such different backgrounds. It just opened my eyes to the world in so many ways. And basically from there, Microsoft hired me.
Yeah, I can see that. And did you feel like you, because I think INSEAD's an interesting one, isn't it? It feels like it is quite international. It feels quite inclusive. And it doesn't mind people coming. In fact, it celebrates people coming from different countries, different cultures, different backgrounds. Did you feel that sense of imposter syndrome when you were there? Or did you just feel like everyone was, you know, learning together and it didn't matter your background?
My imposter syndrome was coming more in the classroom versus in like actually the study time or being with my friends, because it was... our education is very different than some of the other systems. And so you sit in these big halls where you have people with native English speakers just speaking up. And I just couldn't even, I was still structuring my words. How do I say this? How do I do that? But beyond that, yes, INSEAD does celebrate differences. And it's really, some of my best friends to this day are from that time. And it's actually one of the moments where, again, I had this moment of, we were giving each other, for the first couple of periods, you work with the same group of people, like you can't choose. And they are very carefully selected, and they are very carefully selected to be very different than you. And so you're really forced right away into this environment where you have to learn how to navigate differences of cultures, etc. But at the end of it, we had to give each other feedback. And I remember one of my classmates said to me as a positive, "You're very organized." And then somebody else said to me can be improved, "You're very organized."
Yeah.
Here's this one quality that I have, and people are seeing it differently. And it was really, it sounds like a small thing, but it was such an aha moment of how one thing can be perceived differently in the way you come across and how you have to work on the way you come across and build that awareness for yourself. So when you work with different people, you can adapt to some extent to what they are able to receive and respond to.
Yeah, interesting. Well, that's that word, interesting. No, but by that I meant it's a fascinating insight. And I'm now thinking about how I've seen you lead Pinterest during the pandemic, which has been an extraordinary time for Pinterest, you know, real growth, real change. And I think, you know, the qualities that I see in you as a leader, apart from clearly you're very smart, you're very passionate, you are very direct, but I think you're also very caring and you have this real sense of community. And I wonder, listening to you now talk about your time growing up, your time at INSEAD, maybe some of those skills, some of that environment has been what's helped you lead Pinterest over these last 18 months or so. I wonder how it's felt for you. It's, you know, it has been a challenging time for everyone, hasn't it? What kind of skills have you used to get through this last period of time?
I mean, the last year, I for me personally, it was one of the most difficult years of my career, but also the best and one of the most rewarding. So it's been fascinating how much is combined in one and how many learnings I have as a human being and as a professional. I think the first thing to say is, you know, I was very lucky with my team at Pinterest. Like, they were such a great team. Everybody is so positive. Everybody was so welcoming, so willing to help. And I think everybody understood the fact that, you know, as a new leader, I came in remotely and I'm still remote. A year later, I haven't met my team face to face and they haven't met me. And actually they've created a great, great platform for me to come in. But the thing that I really had to, you have to think about this, you know, a few things is empathy of understanding people's circumstances, and everybody was going through something. I don't think over the last year there was anyone who can say they had consistently great time, you know, from lockdowns to personal challenges, health challenges, etc. Everybody was doing that, was going through something. And I think what was important is for us to create a platform where people could talk about those challenges in a way that they could hear. And this is why we worked with you and created a couple of workshops where people were able to open up and talk about what they were going through. Because actually sometimes, you know, in the day-to-day, we're not so willing to open up. I think the second thing has been is really making sure to over-communicate what is important. And that is both on a strategic level, but also on a day-to-day. What is important? What is important? Because there's so much that feels important in that hour. I wouldn't even say in that day, in that hour, but actually it's not important and can be dropped. And then the final thing that I try to create is structured time for unstructured conversations. So because one of the things that was really missing is really getting to know the people behind the professional. But it's so difficult to do this when you're having this business interaction. So what I try to do is, you know, when I talk to people just without any agenda. So let's talk about, you know, what's going on in your life right now, what's happening, etc. And it really helps you to build that empathy and understanding of what people are going through, and they help them navigate the business life. Because as a business, we still have business goals to hit, and that's still important. And you know, that doesn't go away. But is how do you work on the two planes at the same time so that you can deliver both business results, but also making sure that people are thriving?
Yes. And I think that piece, you know, we know again in the seven needs and the work we did with you, that piece around relationships is so important, isn't it? And I think particularly in this last period of time, because in some ways you can, it's sort of easy to have those nice conversations, you know, hi, how are you, where are you from, and getting to know people. It's also relatively easy to give people structure around what they need to achieve. I think the piece that I've noticed with you at Pinterest is that bit in the middle, the hard conversations around what does what do results really look like? What does clarity of outcomes really look like? And, you know, when you're not afraid to, one, be very clear about that, but also to have to change the people, perhaps, that, you know, not everyone has been right, not everyone's gone through the journey because you're a new leader and, you know, people have moved around like they have in all organizations. Has that been difficult? That piece that, you know, having those difficult conversations, how have you got through that?
I think difficult conversations happen all the time. And they are on all kinds of areas. So one of the things, you know, when I talk about my values as a leader and as a professional, actually the way it's really important to walk the walk. And what that means is that, so, you know, for example, I'll say, you know, here is clients win work first, we win second. And what that means in certain times, we are going to say no to something because it's not right for the client, even if that means that we are going to sacrifice something short term. And so it's been these kind of moments where, you know, I've had to say no to things, or I've had to lead through difficult times, you know, lockdown and pressure on all sides, etc. I think what's really important when you're having a difficult conversation is first to start with yourself. It's like checking your own intention. What's your intention behind it? And it's really like understanding how you're assessing a situation from your own perspective, because, you know, we see the world as we are, not as it is, as we perceive it is. I think the second thing is really like full clarity of the circumstances of what's going on and why a decision is being made in the way it's made. You know, so when I've pushed my team on all kinds of things, small and big, but I'll always explain why. And the other thing is, I'm always open to feedback. Again, one of the things I always say is, my opinion is just that; it's only my opinion, and I'm always open to be challenged. I never think of myself as being right all the time, because I'm not. I'm fully aware that I'm not, and in fact, I'm probably most of the time, if I'm left on my own, I wouldn't be making great decisions. And so I think it's about creating a platform in which you can challenge each other in a respectful way, assuming good intentions. And that's how you become better as a team and as an organization.
Yeah, assuming good intentions. I like that. That's a great attitude to have when you're having very difficult conversations. You know, another of the seven needs is around autonomy and control. And one of the things we've seen for many people that have children during lockdown and have had to homeschool them, it's been super challenging. I think for you, you've got young children, you're a single mom, you're running this extraordinary business, this is growing like mad. How have you managed to be a great mom at the same time?
I'm a great mom some of the time.
Oh yeah, I know that feeling. I think if you ask my children, they'll be like, yeah, thank goodness we've left home, mom, because you know what?
I mean, I'm not going to lie, it's been tough. And look, I hear a lot from my children of, you know, my children sometimes give me their own performance reviews as a mom. And yeah. You know,
remind us how old they are.
They're 9 and 5. Yeah. I have two girls, so they're still, you know, they're still quite young. But, you know, I hear a lot about, well, I'm the only child whose nanny's picking them up from school. Why are you not picking me up? I drop them off in the morning, but I have a nanny who picks them up because I can't manage otherwise. Or there's going to be, well, you're working too much. But in their world, any work is too much.
Of course. So 9 and 5, absolutely, it's too much. I know, as you and I have shared this story so many times, because we've talked about it a lot over this last year, I think the good thing is now Jazz is 23, Sam's 21. Certainly with Jazz was very vocal, like your girls are, I think. You know, when I was young, they were the only children to be picked up. I was the only working mum that they ever knew. Obviously, not true, but that's what they thought. I was the only mum that never picked them up from school. And then suddenly they go into a world where they go, ooh, work experience. That's good. Mum, you could help with that. And then they go to, oh, we need to find a job in university. Mum, you're good at that. And now they're both working. So there's a real sense, particularly Jazz, of, gosh, mum, is this what it was like? You're having to balance all this stuff, and she doesn't have children. So there's a real, you know, journey that they will go through. But I can't. And you had to change your nanny halfway through, didn't you?
That's right. So yeah, so somewhere in the middle, I had to change a nanny in my house at the same time, which was very stressful. That's for sure. But I was very, I'm very lucky because I was able to find, you know, a great nanny who loves the children. They love her, you know, and I have a great network here of friends, you know, our kids go to school together that we can, you know, I can rely on them. So, you know, I'm lucky in that respect that I have a network around me of people that can help. But yeah, it's not easy. At the same time, you know, they are starting to recognize the fact that, you know, my job is also all the things that helps provide in their lives. And also, you know, it does teach them something. You know, they are becoming independent, you know, very, very creative in their way. And recently my 9-year-old said to me, I know you'll always be there for me when I need you. And actually I felt that's because that's exactly true. There will be times like on a day to day when I'm not there, but if she needs me, I'll always be there. And I think the other thing for me has been, I mean, look, I feel guilty quite at times, you know, because I'm never the mom that will bake the cake for the bake sale. I'm not, there's a lot of things I don't do, but I've accepted that that's the trade-off that I have to make, and kind of learning to live with that trade-off has been probably one of the big, actually the big learnings of last year, that I've become much more comfortable with all the things I'm not going to do and all the things I'm going to outsource. But then the things that really matter to me in my family, with my family, I will always be there and I will always prioritize. So I don't miss when we used to do them school plays, you know, the recitals. I'm always there for these are the things, and I will absolutely reschedule things that work to be there for those important moments. But some of the more little things,
I don't know. You know what? Making a cake, anyone can make a cake. And I used to do that thing where you get chocolate brownies and you'd get somebody else to make them. And then I'd sort of put them in a tin and pretend I make them for a while. And then I didn't even pretend anymore. But, you know, and it's so ridiculous, isn't it? I look back on it and think, why did I care so much? Why did I go through all that guilt when actually it's just not important, but it feels so important at the time. I mean, so there are two things there. You said network, clearly you're very organized. Is there anything else for any of those listeners today where you go, actually the advice to give people to get through it, what are the things that you think helps you, that you would give that advice to other people?
I spend a lot of time reflecting. I have a structured time for reflection, and that is daily, weekly, monthly. I mean, I have ways of how I do it. And what I mean by that is I take time to really think how do I feel? What did I accomplish? Would I do anything different? Is there a learning for me? And that is really, sometimes it's when you look at your week and you go, is there something I could have done differently? Were there meetings that maybe I didn't need to attend? You know, is there something else that I need to prioritize? So I really spend this time like thinking about where I am, and I adapt and evolve with that. So, and again, there will be times where family will take priority. There are times where work will take priority, you know, but I normally work with quite strict boundaries around my time. But I think that time for reflection is super important. I think the second thing for me is I'm constantly learning, and I'm learning from people I meet, books, you know, advice I get, you know, things I listen to. And I think that's something, like, I always, when I hear something or read something, I go, oh, that's really interesting. I'm gonna implement it in my life. You know, I've learned so much from our conversations and some of the work we did when we did those workshops. And some of them were quite simple, of the things I changed in my day-to-day life, which we can talk about. But I just think I have this thing of like, I really have an open mind of kind of, what can I do differently? And how can I evolve again as a human being, as a mom, as a professional, in all the different ways of and all the spectrums of us as humans.
Yeah. Yeah. As humans. Absolutely right. Okay. So let's come on and talk about some of the stuff that we've done together, but some of the learnings that perhaps you've evolved or changed your life with. What have you done to help yourself be resilient, look after your own well-being? What are the kinds of things that you do?
I mean, after we did a workshop together, and actually one of the things I realized is there was actually some of the things I had to do were quite simple. So, and I mean, it's so basic that
it's not really possible. No, but it's true. I mean, the thing is, you need to be you kind of need to be reminded it, because we're so busy, aren't we, working and thinking about the commercial outcomes, we forget about the other stuff, which is the point of doing it in the first place. So tell us some of the things.
So one of the toughest times for me was the winter this year when we were going through the lockdown, and I found that really challenging. But and actually the things I started to do is go to bed early, take your phone out of your bedroom, you know, exercise on a regular basis. And it doesn't have to be a full hour exercise. 15 minutes is enough. So there was a lot around the physical, kind of the physical well-being. Then there was the area around like kind of more the emotional and I'd say spiritual well-being, which has been actually, that's another big thing for me from this last year, is really appreciating the importance of play and creative time. So that's I've done this in the past. I've taken all kinds of art classes and things, but I actually started to do this with my children, which is also like was a great time for me to disconnect, but also connect with them. So it was phenomenal. So I've been doing quite a lot of painting, for example, which is something now I'm starting to really enjoy.
Lovely.
And also just spending this time like just being, not doing, just being, and really resting and kind of taking this time of like not having to think, not having and feeling pressured to do stuff or to be thinking about stuff, just being and whatever you feel in the moment. And again, that's something that I've started to do with the children. You know, sometimes it's just, you know, we're just being together and just having a nice chat. And actually that's a time well spent. It doesn't always have to be the big events that, you know, you're going to memorize. And actually this every day, the extraordinary in the ordinary is one of the big things I've discovered and started to reappreciate over the last year.
I love that, the extraordinary and the ordinary. I think that's lovely. And have you found that you've all got better at doing that? Because one of the things, we were in away a few weeks ago, and actually with some great friends that we always go away on, and we were saying, oh gosh, isn't it interesting now? We don't bring our phones to the table anymore at all. You know, unless we're trying to show each other a picture or do something, it's evolved to now being so important that we just spend some time talking, but it feels quite hard to do it to begin with. So you kind of almost need to practice it a bit, like the going to bed early and not having your phones in your room so you sleep. It's so easy. Actually, it's quite hard to implement sometimes.
Yeah, and it's definitely one of the things, again, like my children are very good at that, to tell me, you know, put your phone away at some point, which I started to do now way more. I've become way better. And actually, you know, the phone is like a crutch a little bit that sometimes you use when you have a time to fill. But now it's like, you know, learning to be with yourself and with your thoughts. And actually, more importantly, especially when you're with the people that you are. So I've definitely become better at that. I've started to read more, so way less screen time. So even like this year, I think I've read already about 20 books, which I don't think probably is more than I read a couple of years combined before. I don't know. I mean, I'm a big reader, but I think I went through a period where I wasn't reading as much, and somehow started to read again. And now I'm really enjoying it, and I don't think I'm gonna give that up. So again, it's thinking about, with the limited time, is such an important resource that we have. It's the most important resource that we have. How do you spend it? I think I personally have become more mindful of that. And that is in all areas of life.
Yeah. Yeah. What book have you read in the last few months that you've really enjoyed?
Actually, it's a book that's the most recent one I really liked, was somebody from my team recommended. It's called The Course of Love. It's a great story about a marriage.
Okay, so looking forward, what have you got to look forward to over the next year? Let's start with Pinterest. How's Pinterest going to evolve? What are you looking forward to?
Well, we're continuing to work on scaling the business in the market. You know, it's a very UK, such a interesting, great, but also very competitive market. And we will continue to tell our story of, you know, how Pinterest enables both our consumers as well as our advertisers to make the most out of the platform. You know, that one of the beautiful things about Pinterest is that advertising is so well fitted in what our consumers are looking for. It's such a great additive. Like, very often people tell me, where's the advertising? I can't see the ads, because they fit so naturally, you know, because people are looking to be inspired and people are looking to for this new thing that's going to enhance their lives. Like, brands can really benefit from that. We are continuing to build a team. We're hiring people, and that's actually probably the thing I spend the most time thinking about is, how can we build a team now, that a team that hasn't met face to face? How do you continue that How do you build a culture in that environment? And how do we make sure that everybody feels supported and socially connected, et cetera? And then we have, you know, we are going to have some great product announcements coming forward, which I think is going to be great. But yeah, we're continuing the work of scaling the business here and really educating the market on what Pinterest is for and what Pinterest is like.
Yeah. And as you know, what we've been looking at is, you know, the energy of your team, the well-being of your team, how that fits into an inclusive environment and how you scale, as you say, you create that culture. What are the couple of areas that you're looking at as we're evolving this culture, that you're evolving, making kind of well-being much more of a strategic priority?
Well, inspired culture is such a core, building an inspired culture is such a core part of what we stand for as a company. So really there's a lot of things that we're doing in that respect. So some of the things, you know, we do as a company is we give people time off. We call them Pintention days. So far we've had twice this year for 2 days every time. We've given people, the whole company shuts down and nobody works. And people are given, this is the time for them to be with themselves. And normally ahead of those times, you know, they'll be having access to professionals where they can learn all kinds of different things. I think the other thing which I loved, which I just experienced for the first time a couple of months ago, was we have this annual conference called KnitCon, which again, the whole company comes together. Normally it would have been face-to-face, but this time it was remote, where you learn all kinds of things from people from within the company, as well as experts. And it's everything from how to make a cocktail, or, you know, one, there was a person on my team who taught a class on an art class, and it was just so fascinating. But then it's all kinds of other things that you can learn. So as a company, we're definitely committed to that. You know, in our sales organization, once a quarter, we have a no meetings week. So like no meetings are allowed. And again, when I first went through that, I said, can we really go for a whole week without meeting? But actually it was absolutely amazing. And it just gives time to people to really think and strategize and really find what works for them in the company.
Which I love. I mean, there's just some really interesting, innovative thoughts and approaches to building the business. Just finally, look, you've been on an incredible journey. If I was to ask a member of your family to describe you, how would they describe Milka?
I'm laughing because as I said, I just went and saw my father. And my father, one of the questions my father asked me, he said, I still don't understand what you do for a living. He's like, I don't understand your job. The reason why I say that is I think ultimately is what stands is who you are as a human being. And I think who you are is how you lead. I think they'll say, you know, I mean, my family is biased, so of course I'm not going to say anything negative, but I think they'll say, you know, I am very driven. I am very passionate. I am very direct, but I'm also very empathetic. And I like to think about the well-being of everybody together.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a great description of you. Milka, it's an absolute joy to talk to you. I think, you know, we only met each other just before lockdown, but we've spent some time together. I've loved getting to know you, getting to know Pinterest, but also, you know, us kind of becoming virtual friends. And I really look forward to spending some more proper time face to face together as soon as we're able to. But thank you for talking to me today.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for the support over the last year in all kinds of ways, from chats and to the work we did with the company. Meeting you has been also one of my highlights of the last year.
That's nice, isn't it? A good old girl loving. Brilliant. Thank you, Milka. See you soon.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed Reset the Podcast, I'd love it if you would forward it to your work colleagues, friends, and family. Reset the Podcast is a Let's Reset and Advertising Week global production. Executive producer is Richard Larson, with me, Suki Thompson. Thanks to our sponsor, Liars Non-Alcoholic Spirits, and voiceover artist, Talitha Penny. Music provided by Audio Network.